the whole 10,000 hours to be expert or something. You know, these guys have sat there for days, day after day, week after week, months, years, decades, not looking at charts, but looking at those numbers flow, and they get a sense. And that sense is not just a guess sense. That's like a gut feel that's through years and years of experience of looking at where it's going to bounce, where it's going to fail. And, you know, and that creates those support and resistance levels that, you know, then the actual analysis kind of then echoes and reinforces.
Welcome to the Alpha Man podcast, hosted by Stephen Goldstein and Mark Randall. The podcast which is always looking to help traders, whether they're new to the game or whether they are seasoned and experienced traders, explore how they can be better, more productive, more effective traders by looking at the human aspects of trading performance. The Alpha Man podcast proudly partners with the esteemed Society of Technical Analysts, a distinguished not-for-profit organisation dedicated to providing informative and educational resources for its members. We're excited to announce their upcoming second Technicals to Trading Systems one-day conference in London, featuring an array of exceptional speakers, will be held on Tuesday the 16th of April. This offers both in-person attendance, where you can take part in fantastic networking opportunities with like-minded people, or you can view it online. Visit the STA website at technicalanalyst.com for further details and registration. Furthermore, we're thrilled to endorse the STA's Outstanding Home Study Course. As a special offer for Alpha Mind podcast listeners, you can enjoy a £100 discount on this exceptional programme, crafted by world-renowned technical analysis experts. Visit our website at alpha-mind.net to learn more and take advantage of this exclusive opportunity. Now, on with this week's podcast.
Well, welcome to this week's Alpha Mind podcast, and we've got Steve Miley with us. Steve, one of our, or my fellow life veterans from the trading floor of life from the early 90s, and it's great to have him on because the context of being in that market and trying to understand that market, I think really established the journey that he's been on ever since, which is really using technical analysis as a foundation for multiple aspects of a diverse career path that's also ventured him into the new way of some of these funds are building particular teams to take advantage of the market. Well, I think perhaps, Steve, welcome to the show, but also let's just go back into those early days of what got you into the space of understanding the market through, you know, charting, as we call it. And what advantage you saw that, and then just how that evolved over time.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you both for having me on. Yeah, super excited to be on the Alpha Mind podcast. And so my journey goes way, 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 way back. So I don't want to wind it too far back, but I got interested in financial markets from a very young age. I'm going to say 12, 13. As far back then, and I started. God, so you guys remember, I clipped out coupons out of the Mail on Sunday and the Sunday Times, and sent off to for like investment trust and unit trust. Because the way I saw I came from kind of quite a humble background. I grew up in the East End, and we didn't have a lot of money, and I felt that, you know, if I could, you know, you can only make so much earning money, but then by investing it, all these people seem to have a lot of wealth, seem to invest it, and you can easily turn £1,000 into, you know, £10,000 easier than earning it. And that's the way I saw it. So I got kind of hooked at quite a young age. And then I went, and you guys will remember this, we had they called it selling off the crown jewels, which was all the privatizing of the nationalized industries. And so we had British Telecom, etc., British Gas being sold off. And so I basically stagged all of those with my own money, which wasn't a lot from like a paper round, but also because my parents and grandparents weren't particularly interested and didn't know what was going on. So we had multiple, let's say the whole family put in different applications for shares. You know, I was only 14, I think, at the time when the first one came through. And that kind of, and obviously, you basically, the government gave it away and you kind of doubled your money overnight. And I did, you know, and you know, I turned like my paper round money of like 400 or 500 quid that I saved into, into the best part of £1,000 at like 14-15, and that and I was away, and I even though I had kind of quite a humble upbringing, I kind of did very well at school, and then I ended up going to Oxford University and studied economics, and I always had a passion for economics from quite a young age. And then, again, moving then from the East End out into Essex, there were a lot of people from Essex getting on that train going into the city of London. And even though that wasn't my family, never came from that background, you know, I saw, you know, wealth around me. And these guys seemed to get up early, and most of them actually come home quite early as well, and seemed to do very well. And they were like friends of family. And so I kind of had that thought, right, okay, I want to go into the city. I've got, you know, enjoy economics. And so went down that route and kind of actually stumbled into, through like a friend of a friend, stumbled, as you said, onto the London International Financial Futures Exchange, which was better known as LIFE, and started to learn my way around financial futures. And what I did realize is there was kind of a lot of these very young, in most cases, traders and brokers had this kind of gut feel for the market. And although I kind of could see and understand that gut feel, I wanted something more than that to sort of overlay onto it. And the very few people really at that time were really using technical analysis. There were a few, I'd say I had, you know, probably less than 10% were using technical analysis. They were like, I remember they used to have like little screens in the corner of the trading floor, and you could go and get these pivot levels, and some of the traders would write them down on their trading cards and they'd use them. And I remember speaking to someone, they explained what it was, and it kind of piqued my interest. And then a few broken companies had like charts on, you know, and they had some software down on the trading floor, and they were looking at charts. And, you know, that was something that I had, you know, experienced through my education. And I always had a passion for mathematics, and then that coupled with the economics. And so that kind of led me, even before I went fully into technical analysis, I was using technical analysis on the trading floor as a broker to add to my sort of broking vocabulary. I could explain the market. I could, you know, give my clients levels. I could, you know, talk about where my bias was, you know, bullish or bearish on different time frames around that analysis. And so sort of fell in love with it a little bit back then. And then I also remember that time reading, which a lot of people I think did back that time, and I still recommend these books, Market Wizards by Jack Schwager. And I was really, really, I would say fortunate, but I don't think it was fortunate enough. I got to interview Jack about 2 or 3 years ago, and that was a real honor, having been inspired by the books. And reading those books, there are a few chapters, you know, dedicated to the technical analysis approach, or specific traders who had used technical analysis. And again, that kind of just, you know, even made me fall more in love with like that kind of discipline and that approach to looking at markets. So yeah, that's me trying to put it in a nutshell as quick. I mean, I could go on and on, but I mean, that was my journey into the initial part of technical analysis. But even at that point there, I was still very much a junior, because I wasn't doing it in any kind of real direct professional capacity. It was a tool I used as a broker, really. So yeah, that's how I got there.
Yeah, I think that's an important point. Having the ability to get a view on something and giving some sense as to where something is going was critical in my evolution as a broker, because, of course, you had to have a clue from somewhere. You weren't going to get some sort of directional clue of the short term from economics. And yeah. As you say, having an edge in those days, and even in the early 80s, there were one or two people were doing technicals, but it was barely there. We started to push out Reuters pages on it, and people were all over it, because, like you say, they needed the pivot levels and support and resistance, because they had to have some structure around their day, and a lot of them just couldn't be bothered, so there was left to a few of us to sort of give that direction. But I think you're quite right, though, that you, and I sense that when you talk about it, you're excited to talk about it. And I was in the same thing. You kind of get excited that you're playing with this creative sort of work that could be multiple things that you're looking at. But once you find the bit that you think, yeah, that works for me, then you start thinking, anyway, I've just predicted that, and it's happened in front of my eyes. Yeah. So there's a power that comes with that. And I think it also allows you to talk to other people, other investors, you know, other people on the floor, you've got something relevant that's added value just in general conversation. And I'm sure you've probably looked at things on television and thought, yeah, I'd sell that. But you're constantly doing technicals. You're seeing a Fibonacci turn up in all sorts of things. But yeah, I think, and that creates passion, and passion's driven your career. You know, that passion in that has led you into some fairly serious businesses.
Can I ask a question? Jump in here, because
you
know, there's something which I kind of, I'm curious about in your story there. And you know, I resonate a lot with it. I came up from, you know, a humble background. I wasn't from the East End, but my parents were. And, you know, I moved to the suburbs with, obviously, they moved to the suburbs where I was brought up. You know, comp school. I never went to university, and I went into the city. I found it fascinating. But I think I was always a bit more of a thinker. I was very analytical. And, you know, when I got into trading, and I was working in a bank trading room rather than on the floor, and we had a lot of, there was a lot of trading going on, which was very reminiscent of the floor, but behind screens, particularly in the FX side.
Yes.
And a lot of people just buying and selling on levels. Mm. And, you know, for me, I also, a little bit, I suppose, like you, as my personality was, I just needed to know the story. Mm. I couldn't just trust myself with a feel. You know, even though that gave me some sort of guide, I needed something a little bit more, like some sort of narrative. And that also led me into technical analysis, partly because I felt like fundamental analysis wasn't giving me that. And then I started noticing that all the guys on the FX desk who were just looking at numbers, we didn't have, in those days we had the FX screen. So just numbers. There was no charts on their screens or anything, and there was just brokers shouting down orders. So there was like order flow coming through the voice boxes, but they were often buying and selling at what were the support and resistance points that I was seeing on the charts. Mm. You know, you see them came in at the Fibonacci retracement levels, and even though they didn't know about it, they were reacting at those key levels. So I sort of started to notice that as well. And it was a fascinating element in my own education as a trader.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, and you know what? You know, you said about the feeling, the passion. I do still get quite excited about it. And nothing. I'm surprised at how surprised I am when it works. Still, you know, because and particularly when it comes, you know, as you say, like off a fib level or off a trend line or a moving average, and some, you know, the market literally comes off to the tick, you know, kind of stuff. Or you these days, you often get a little kind of intraday breach, and the market tests an algo tests the water because it knows the support or resistance is there. It runs a few stops and it comes straight back and rejects it. Whatever it might be, it's still, you know, it still fascinates me, and I have a little kind of smile on my face, and I do actually. I had a really good mentor. So I transitioned then into, as the floor started to come to an end, as the physical exchange and move on to electronic exchange, I had a mentor and I went for a job. And I decided I didn't want to stick in the broking business because I felt that there's no legs in it because, you know, it was all, you know, going electronic. And obviously it turns out that was definitely wrong because there was huge legs in it after that. But I felt that I wanted something a bit more secure. And so I started to, there was an offer to go and work with. So my mentor was Tom Hobson. He's no longer with us, very sadly, but he mentored me at Merrill Lynch. And I transitioned out of broking into a technical analyst, and he mentored me and taught me, and going from the very basics, you know, up to then learning a lot more and becoming really passionate and adding multiple indicators and all sorts of stuff onto my charts, only to then strip it all back in my later years because I realized that, you know, the acronym KISS, keep it simple, stupid, you know, works. And some of these real, the simplest stuff, and I think it echoes what you're saying there about, you know, the traders almost knowing where the levels are because, and you know what that is? That's, you know, the whole 10,000 hours to be expert or something. You know, these guys have sat there for days, day after day, week after week, months, years, decades, not looking at charts, but looking at those numbers flow, and they get a sense. And that sense is not just a guess sense. That's like a gut feel that's through years and years of experience of looking at where it's going to bounce, where it's going to fail. And, you know, and that creates those support and resistance levels that, you know, then the actual analysis kind of then echoes and reinforces. So, yeah, I think the way it all works is fascinating. And we've mentioned Fibonacci a couple of times. You know, that's one of my – I always say when I'm mentoring or teaching a trader around technical analysis, you know, use what resonates with you, right? Don't just be told – my view is give them all the tools and they'll build their own strategy. They're, you know, give them the toolkit and then they can come up with what they want. But something that really resonated with me was Fibonacci the first time I saw it, probably because of all the maths that was involved. And then you've got the golden ratio. And then when I worked, you know, I did some more, you know, some more research, and I found that the golden ratio occurs – you know, in the physical world, in nature, it's literally, the golden ratio is literally in our DNA. I mean, and then it also, you know, is seen throughout the cosmos, you know, throughout the universe. That to me was, well, you know, of course it works because it's literally in us. You know, we're actually driving it ourselves. And so, you know, all of that just then ended up just compounding into, you know, what ended up being. So I was, you know, I started working 91 through to on the floor to 99, 2000, then transitioned and then did, you know, another, well, at Merrill Lynch Bank of America, another 8 years as a research analyst, technical research analyst, covering all markets. And that was the other thing. Let me just chuck that in and we can discuss that. Is, you know, we've mentioned Forex and we've mentioned futures, but the great thing with technical analysis, right, is it works everywhere. I mean, if you've got a market and you've got some price action, you've got the data, you can apply it to it to anything. And the great thing is it could be the Brazilian government debt market, which I know nothing about, even having done this for 30 years. I don't know nothing. And I probably wouldn't go to my deathbed still not knowing anything. But I could still put a Fibonacci on it and a trend line and still tell you where I think it's going to go. And that kind of really appealed as well. The multifaceted side of it, the cross-asset side of it.
But markets are biological systems.
Yeah,
that's
indeed.
What they are.
Indeed.
So they're a natural force. So they can only grow at a natural rate, which the golden ratio, like you said, has captured through time immemorial in the cosmos and everything.
Yeah, it's really interesting that actually if you've got a mindset that you know, is absorbed by, you know, the technical analysis sort of journey, yeah, that's curiosity. And if we can be curious about things and think about things, and as you say, you know, the natural order of things using Fibonacci. But I was really into space and astronomy. And I started to hear from an astrological point of view that the Russians were using astrology to trade the markets. This is back in about 1991. And that there were some people doing intraday astrology. Then I read a story, I think it must be in Telegraph or Mail, one of those things, that there was a bloke called Norman near Covent Garden who had a little shop and was doing intraday astrology. So I contacted Norman, right, because I'm curious. And of course, as a broker, you're looking for answers, right? You think, well, you never know. Let's give Norman a call. So it's like a bookshop he worked in. And so I spoke to this bloke called Norman. And he says, yeah, so all I need is if you can give me the date of birth of something. So I gave him the date that the gilt futures opened on life as its date of birth.
Right.
Let's see what happens. All right. And so he then started to send me an hour segments for a day saying up, up, down, down, up, up. First 3 days, total load of rubbish. Okay. I then get another set from him. It looked better than 50%. I then went to Geneva to meet a hedge fund client, but had got the download of the night before. The night before was going up, up, down. I don't know what's going on here, but I've got up. I've got all sorts of ups and downs in this cluster. And that was around about 11 o'clock or something the following day. So I'm in Geneva. What happens at that time? Thatcher's resigned.
Oh, gosh.
And the market went bananas, Anyway, so I got a few more things from Norman, and he was still better than 50%, and he died that Christmas, and that was the end of that. But
he didn't predict that, did he,
Norman?
I thought, because I'd heard these rumors that the Russians are very much into, and they were moving a lot of money around in those days.
Yeah.
They were really into the astrological story.
Fair trade, Moscow.
But, yeah, indeed, but, you know, this bloke Norman, sort of, my curiosity was attracted to to that. And I looked at, you know, Delta Phenomenon, you know, World's Wildest Stuff and Sequence of Moons, and is there anything in that? Because actually, yeah, you think, well, why not? But yeah, good old Norman predicted that Thatcher was going to resign the day before. And
if only.
Okay, going to return to the podcast shortly. Just very quickly, I want to tell you about my new book, Mastering the Mental Game of Trading. This book, which was published last month by the publisher Harriman House, is available on Kindle, Audible, and Bookform. The book has received some fantastic reviews. It goes deep into the process of trading, into the mental aspects of trading, deep into who you are as a trader, and explores these from a unique and new angle, and introduces some amazing frameworks which help you get a much deeper understanding of what you are doing when you engage with market, when you take risks, when you trade the market. The book, as I said, is available on various forms, so do have a look at it. And if you do enjoy it, please do leave a great review for us on Amazon. Now back to the podcast.
Yeah, but you know, it is fascinating, all these areas, and I guess we could talk for hours on that if we're not careful. But we'd love to hear what you're doing today, Steve, and where you've moved on to.
Yeah. So I had, like, you know, a long career in investment banking. You know, after I left, I was 15 years Merrill Lynch, which was then Merrill Lynch Bank of America, and I was a casualty of, you know, that takeover in the global financial crisis, and then went to Credit Suisse. I was a director there, running their Forex technical analysis department for another 3 years, and enjoyed that. And then moved on to, and since then, so that was through to 2011, I'm going to say. And then I then went independent and started writing technical analysis reports, and then basically for the industry, and did that for some time, and still do that, actually. Not for some time. I'm still doing that, still providing reports for my institutional clients. And again, that's cross asset class, you know, so on all those old markets that we used to be involved in. So bunds, bobbles, shats, gilts, US treasuries, and then also on US index futures and oil, gold. So still covering a lot of the markets I've, you know, covered for years. But then did some teaching and some mentoring, and you know, really loved that, and having not felt that I would love that at all. And actually, because you've got to meet some really, really wonderful people and help them on their journey into financial markets. And in the last few years, we've kind of pivoted away. We're still within the kind of more aiming more retail. But then I have a very old friend, again, going back to the floor, is James Thorpe. And James has been traveling the world as a basically working for a prop company, and one of the largest prop companies as well, Mercury Derivatives. And he set up their whole China operation some years back, and took his family with them, and then eventually came back and settled back in Chicago, where his wife's from. And then you know, through COVID, he started putting together a prop trading company, which we call Trade Day, and we launched that, you know, about 2.5-3 years ago now. And what that is like, so for the listeners who are not kind of aware, the prop trading companies, you know, the big one on the like FX CFD side is FTMO, you probably heard of. And then on the futures side was the big incumbent who kind of launched the industry about 12 years ago, is Top Step Trader. So those are the big kind of incumbents. And we came along and we're growing fast. But it's in this kind of, it's effectively kind of crowdsourcing a retail prop firm. So we have challenges that we set. And basically what the challenge is, make this amount before you lose this amount, right? And the make this amount is slightly more than the lose this amount, you know, to you know, because that shows some kind of consistency, and we have some consistency rules, and there's some other smaller rules around it. But effectively what it is you can come and trade, or take an evaluation challenge is what we call it, and come and take one of those challenges with us, and you have to obviously pay a fee kind of to sort of enter the competition, as it were. And then if you're successful, though, then we fund you into the markets, into the futures markets. And you've got a wide variety of asset classes. We find that a lot of our traders are keen to trade the equity indices. They are, I think, and have been for some time now, flavor of the month. from the retail side. So they're trading the S&P and the NASDAQ. But we still have a decent percentage trading on the commodity markets, primarily gold and oil, and then also in the foreign exchange or the currency futures as they are on the CME. So these are all CME, Chicago Mercantile Exchange-based futures products. And so we've been running that business for about 3 years. We're growing super, super fast. It's a really good industry. And I do get to still do some mentoring. So for our higher tier clients, we do one-to-one mentoring. And so, you know, I still get to talk to clients and traders and to guide them through. There's a massive, you know, and I think, you know, we've just talked about how when we started, you know, some 30, 40 years ago, you know, no one was really looking at technical analysis, even at the institutional level, even the people that know what they're doing. And now, you know, on the retail side, every single retail trader knows everything there is to know about technical analysis, to the point where, you know, I was on with a trader only this week, and he brought up his charts and started going through his strategy with me. And I could hardly see the actual candlesticks. There was so much analysis. And I was like, look, I really love your passion for it. But you know what? The problem that I think a lot of retail trade, and this is completely correct in that the edge that a retail trader can have over an institutional trader is if they do good technical analysis, right? Because it's the same for everyone. They have access to all the same data that the guy sitting in a bank or a hedge fund has. However, the problem is, I think, because they seize that, some of them as well have learned from, I've got to be careful with my words, like maybe dubious sources. So yeah. Now the internet's a big place. And so they've learned from all. Now, I just say to people, I was recommended to read John J. Murthy, Technical Analysis of the Futures Markets, back when I started. And the book was probably about 10, 15, 20 years old then. But it's been updated. Yeah, and it's like the Bible or the Quran. Yeah. Analysis. And it's a great big thick book. I don't know, must run at 500, 600, 700 pages. But it's a great place to start. And then a lot of what you see anyway that's on, you know, YouTube these days and via social media is all been, you know, that's the core book for me. And I still recommend people would like, forget all of that for now. Just go and read this. And then you can expand on that if you want. So we have a lot of traders trading from that perspective. You know, I love the fact we can still mentor them. And we have some real success cases. You know, I think there's a bit of a misunderstanding about how difficult these challenges are to pass. And you know, we do see people passing, a good percentage of traders passing through our challenges. It's then the behavior. And we spoke a little bit about this before we came on, of the behavioral changes and emotional changes that we see when people move from a simulation challenge environment to then when they are actually dealing with real money. And I think that's something that's quite interesting. All that framework and that strategy that technical analysis, as we've been talking about, kind of brings, sometimes goes out the window when, you know, emotions become involved, unfortunately. So we see that quite a lot. So
yeah, there's a few things come up for me there, which is just wanted to sort of put out for you. One is around these emotions that happen with analysis, and I suppose the other one is this thing about, you know, we talk a lot with people, you know, who want to do these prop firms and get financed, and then they work really hard to pass the exam, but then once they pass the exam and they've got the money, they just think it's like a free bet, and they stop doing everything they need to do.
Yeah,
you know, all the discipline that went into the exam. It's like trying to pass your driving test. You know, you do everything possible to steer the car to get past the test. And then once you do, you just put your foot down and you forget all discipline as a driver.
Yeah.
There is something about that within the mind.
Yeah.
And then there's the other element, which is this bit about the emotions when there's real money, or at least it feels, you know, it is real money because it's a chance for you to thrive. And, you know, I always remember a conversation I had a few years ago with someone who I probably consider the best fundamental analyst in the world. And, you know, he obviously would say much longer term views because fundamental analysis tends to work in the long term rather than the short term. Mm-hmm. And he did a lot of advisory with top firms around that and did some of the most extraordinary predictions. But I did ask him once, you know, given your track record and your success rate, you know, have you ever thought about actually taking a running risk? And he just said, I'd be the most terrible risk taker. Yeah. You know, I'd lose all, objectivity, which I put into my analysis, and I'd become hugely subjective and I'd become emotional. So he didn't want to. He knew his strength and his weakness. Yeah. He knew where his passion was in the analysis.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, sort of trying to trade it.
Yeah.
Which kind of sort of begs this question. There is a difference between being good at analysis and then good at taking and running risk. It becomes like a different skill set.
Oh, 100%. You know, and it's no surprise, right? You know, in a lot of ways, when you go, go into an investment bank or you go into a hedge fund, right? There's not one guy sitting there, the broker, the trader, the risk taker, the risk manager, and doing all the analysis as well. It's a diversified team, and that team, because it's a different skill sets that are required. I think it's a really good point you make. We can't be everything, and if anything, you're prohibited from being good at some things because you are good at others. We don't have every single skill. I'm sure there's some super guys out there that do, but I'm definitely not one of those. When I transitioned out of the banks and I traded for myself, and what I quickly learned was what I couldn't do, first of all, and I had a lot of wins and a lot of losses, and I went through a huge emotional roller coaster trading, and made a lot of money and lost a lot of money in fairly short periods of time. And what I realized is that my skill set on doing the analysis was fine, but again, it was like the emotional side of things took over. And what I came to realize in my personal growth, some self-disclosure, I'm a recovered alcoholic, so I'm coming up to 16 years in recovery now. I also, as part of my
congratulations,
recovery,
congratulations.
And then as part of that recovery, I trained as a counselor. I've got a lot of knowledge about myself, and I've obviously counseled other people as well. And what that kind of, what my realization was, is exactly you said there, my skill set doesn't go everywhere. My emotions became too overwhelming for me to control what I was doing, and so the analysis got pushed to the side. And this is from someone that I would, I don't know, sounds egotistical, but I'm smart, I've had a good career, but none of that mattered when it came to my emotions overtaking me. And as much as I could make money, I could also lose it with the next man. And so what I kind of realized is the best thing for me to do was, and I still am involved with the markets from a trading side, but to do what manage that emotion. And what the managing that emotion meant for me was to trade on a slightly longer term time frame. So I would trade. I now trade. I switched it from kind of day trading, where the possibilities are far greater, as in the percentages and the profit numbers. But then I've switched to more like a swing trading, so like a long term swing trading, very short term investing. You would kind of say, and I do well at that. But then that's limited as well, But then what that does for me is it allows me to analyze. I basically put the trades on and almost forget, right? And I can return to them over time. And that helps me remove the emotion. And I think, it's knowing, it's all very well knowing all of our strengths, right? But it's knowing our weaknesses. And that's exactly what you've outlined there, Steve. It's being able to say, well, this is what I am good at. This is what I can do. And this is what I can't do. This is the framework that works for me. And maybe, I think there's this whole, particularly in the retail community, I think there's a whole, I want to be a day trader, right? Or, I want to go and work for a hedge fund, which is, again, seen as fast money, right? Where, there's a huge part of the financial market industry, as we all know, and been our clients over the years, who are not in and out in seconds or in and out in minutes or in and out in days. There's a bigger play to be had out there as well. And I think it's recognizing that, that do what you're good at and park what you're not, and don't chase a dream if it's never going to happen, right? Because for some you know, it's impossible to actually to go forward along certain routes, you know. But that doesn't mean there's not other routes open to you. It's just recognizing and not being, you know, just open your eyes, basically, is what I'm trying to say. Don't be too blinkered, you know, kind of stuff. So, yeah, that's my 2 cents worth on that anyway.
I mean, obviously, you've coached and mentored quite a few people in this journey. Have you noticed any particular qualities for those that were successful? Was there sort of a common quality amongst them?
I think there's two things that really stand out. One, well, actually, I'm going to change that to three. One is humility, I think, to start with, and not feel like you're... I mean, the worst thing you can do is someone gets on a demo account or switches to a live account and they make money on the first trade. And I think we've got a lot of people in the financial markets right now who, you know, X years ago, you know, between 5 and 10 years ago, bought cryptocurrency and it went up and think they can trade because they bought something that went up. Or they were involved during COVID of the whole, you know, Reddit meme stock, it was just ridiculous. Let's face it, it was ridiculous. But we're all sitting at home just watching it unfold on TV, right? And again, just think that was trading the markets, where it's not. That was just something that you kind of bought and went up. And I think, so one thing is a humility to understand your limitations before you start. I think I've seen that. Another thing, which, given that I'm going to guess a large percentage of the listeners are male, which tends to be the case, is that I think females make better traders. And I just don't understand why banks don't focus on females, because they come to the, you know, most of us are either risk takers or we're risk averse, right, at our core. And I think most men are, particularly if they want to go into this industry, have egos and come to the industry as risk takers. And it's much harder to dial back that risk taking element, where a lot of females are more cautious and risk averse. And it's easier, I think, to encourage the risk taking side. So I've certainly noticed that. So if you are one of the whatever it is percent that are the male listeners, get in touch with your female side is what I would say. And then the third thing, which is more from people I've worked with at banks, clients at hedge funds, and then again back to market wizards, looking at the profiles of some of these superstars, like, you know, the likes of, you know, Paul Tudor Jones and Buffett, you know, and just reading between the lines of some of their comments, you know, and this is also people that I've, you know, have been clients of banks and also some of the traders at the banks I've worked at, is that going back to that risk averse and risk taker side, you know, that's kind of, you know, if we go to a, you know, we go to our retail bank and you go to your financial advisor and they get you to fill out the forms and you tick these boxes, would you prefer this or that, right? And we all come out as either you're in a 1 or 2 risk averse or you're a 9-10 risk taker, and we usually we fall into one of those camps, really. We're at one end or the other. What I think I've noticed with these guys who are super successful, and I think it's quite difficult to hold these two views within yourself, it's like cognitive dissonance, where you can hold this, like, two different views at the same time within yourself, is that they are super risk averse. You know, a lot of them are just like, I want to end up the day not losing any money. I want to end the day at least where I started the day. So they've got this natural risk averse within them. But when they see an opportunity, they're almost like, and they're sure as you can be, they're kind of right. I'm all in. I'm going to go and grab that money, right, kind of stuff. And I think that most of us, mere mortals of trading and investing, don't have that, both of those traits within us. And I think the guys who are really good are able to have both of those within them.
We'll be returning to this excellent podcast in a minute. Just a quick reminder about our podcast sponsor, the Brilliant Society of Technical Analysts. They have a superb one-day conference coming up in London on Tuesday the 16th of April. If you can get there, it will be a great chance to network. And they have some incredible speakers lined up, including the amazing Linda Rashke. Go to their website, technicalanalyst.com, to find out more about it. Also, do check out their brilliant home study course, a great way to advance your trading. Go to our website, alpha-mind.net, where you can learn how to get a £100 discount on this brilliant program put together by some of the leading minds in technical analysis. Now, back to the podcast. I'm going to just sort of pass my own view on that, because I've got a similar view, but coming from a slightly different angle. Because when we coach traders, we use a psychometric test,
yes,
which analyzes their risk personality. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of patterns which are really interesting. And, you know, amongst them is that, you know, we find that every single risk personality can succeed in this job.
They have to
find a way that is, you know, from the most risk averse to the most risk tolerant, and from the most highly emotional to the most sort of structured and disciplined. They all find their own way. And to the ones who are in the middle, who perhaps have no particular sort of strong attachment to any. One of the things that I've really noticed on that risk aversion, risk tolerance scale is exactly what you said about, you know, what we see, I would say we probably see more risk averse than risk tolerant traders make it. One of the reasons why I believe that is, without knowing this for a fact, but as a theory, is that the risk-tolerant ones get taken out in the early days.
Yes.
And they don't get a chance to learn trading.
Yes.
Learning trading properly, not just learning a system or a method, but actually learning to be a trader is a multi-year learning experience.
Yes.
You know, maybe even some would say sort of, you know, a decade or longer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't survive those years to learn it, which a lot of the people who take too much risk in the early days do, is you're simply not going to make it. You're going to crash your accounts. You're going to crash and burn.
Yeah.
What we find is that when we do get risk-tolerant people who make it, who get past that, they then become really good because they're not afraid to push the envelope.
Yes.
But what they've all done is they've added a high degree of risk aversion in the form of strong risk management principles to their work. And one of the things that I've noticed in particular is I've worked with quite a few risk managers who have become traders, and some of them are very risk tolerant, but they are really, really good because risk management is burned into their scalp.
Almost. Yes.
Second nature to them. Whereas a lot of people just don't apply solid risk management or robust risk management and get caught out by that. On the other hand, the risk-averse ones, you know, risk management is natural to them.
Yes.
Okay. What they need to find is a way to take them into the market. And this is where technical analysis is really interesting, because it becomes a tool that can open up market opportunity to them, where they can find risk-reward setups or favorable setups. You know, in some cases, they just need to find one setup that they trust.
Yeah.
And they'll just keep playing it and playing it and playing it, and maybe adapting it through time a bit and sort of branching out into two or three. But for them, technical analysis becomes the tool that opens up entry to the market.
Yes, that makes sense. Yeah, it's a good point. I think, I think it's more than a theory. I think, you know, I think you've nailed it. Yeah, I think that's 100%. You know, if you're too much of a risk taker, you're going to get carried out early on, right? It's not sustainable. So, and you, as you say, this is not a, you know, and I think a lot of the traders we have at Trade Day, you know, they're of a generation now, a lot of the people that I deal with. And I don't think it's only of the generation, but I think it's part societal. It's driven by what we've all gone through in the last few years of COVID, et cetera, of this kind of YOLO FOMO, you know, you only live once, you know, fear of missing out kind of mentality, which I don't think is only generational. I think it's partly generational. I think it's partly societal. I think it's partly, you know, driven by, you know, changes we've seen in, you know, in technology and social media, etc. And what that brings with it is, you know, that change in discipline and eagerness and a need for things to happen very quickly, which doesn't necessarily happen in, well, it's difficult to capture, you know, and to get, you can't buy and create experience, right? You know, so,
no.
You know, and it's easy for a load of a load of old guys sitting around the mics to say we've got it, but you can't. You can't buy experience and you know, but you can get the experience fairly quick if you put the time in, right? And go to the right places and get mentored and get educated, you know, and that's what kind of what we're trying to do at Trade Day, is to guide people to a place where they can move away from that you know, overtly risk taking, and to be more controlled, and to not move, but not go to the whole, you know, YOLO FOMO, you know, swinging for the fence, and to you know, to try and educate them to say, look, this is a you know, it's a cliche, but cliches are cliches for a reason, right? It's a marathon, not a sprint, you know, and from personal experience, you know, I know what it is to turn a small account into a, I don't want to say how many figures account because it makes me cry, and then turn it back to zero again, you know, kind of stuff. So that's
you're not a trader. You're not a trader until you've done that.
No, well, yeah. I almost wish the number wasn't as high, because then it would, you know, it'd be part of my learning process. So, but yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's been a really interesting journey, and where I am right now is, you know, I'm loving it, you know, with Trade Day, in that I get to mentor, I get to guide, I get to see people, you know, flourish and succeed. You know, there's a lot of technical analysis around it, which is still a passion, even though I've been doing it now for 30 years. And it keeps me very much involved on a day-to-day basis with the markets, which, you know, I think when I was at the banks, I was a little bit, you know, I was never a politician and, you know, could never climb that greasy pole. But what I have now is, you know, what I think, you know, that, you know, going all the way back to the beginning of this chat is, you know, what I had was a kind of a passion, you know, a passion and a desire. And you guys have picked up on that, you know, for financial markets. You know, it was driven partly by greed, but also fear. You know, I came from a humble background. I didn't want to stay in that humble background, and I wanted something more. And the financial markets had delivered that to me. And there was one point where I was thinking of moving away from it all, but, you know, and going even down the counseling road. But you know what? I think I found somewhere in between where I can help, guide, mentor, almost counsel, and, you know, pretty much like you guys have to an extent, right? And then also to be very much involved in something that, you know, comes very naturally to me, and that's the markets.
Greed or desire?
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, desire. Maybe desire is a better word than greed. Maybe it is.
Yeah.
So here's a question.
Yeah.
About 15 months ago, none of us knew what ChatGPT was. And suddenly, if you ask a youngster about, okay, what methodology route are they going to follow to, you know, become a trader, they're probably, the first thing they're going to do is they're probably just going to go on an AI platform and go that route. Now, I don't know that I know the answer to that question. I don't know that we know, because it seems to be a different language, but I think you may have, I sort of looked at part of your program, and there was AI was mentioned somewhere. But I mean, what's your view on that? Are you picking up anything in terms of whether that is it useful? Is it useless? Is it just part of the story? Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, I mean, I've been working with a company, you know, developing AI solutions for financial markets way before. You know, it's probably been, God, I don't know now, with Vega probably. It's over 5 years. I mean, it's definitely predates COVID, so maybe 6-7 years. And I kind of had a, you know, coming and going relationship with them, and been guiding them on the technical analysis side. And currently are more involved than I previously was. They were doing this way before it became super popular, and saw that there was an opening here. And you know, I don't think I'm giving anything away by saying that. You know, so far, the amount of work they put, a lot of work in, and there is definitely results to be had. Yeah, but what I think we can categorically say, because we would know it from the markets and by the stock price, that there's no like holy grail, right? There is no holy grail. It's not there. Or if there is, it hasn't been discovered yet. I think we're still a long way from that. And if there is a holy grail, it'll get leaked out, and it will change the dynamic of the market, and the market will just evolve and go somewhere else, you know, and it'll, and so I don't think there's going to be a, you know, one all-encompassing market, you know, like strategy or that defines what the market is going to do. There's always going to be stochastic external events. There's always going to be shocks that can't be, you know, that can't be AI'd, you know, that can't be predicted, that can't be, you know, fully understood. And, you know, there's always going to be a human interaction in there, as you know, you know, let's hope there's always a human interaction in there that's going to either push things too far or stop them going too far enough. And that will allow markets to kind of go where they want and where they need to go. Mm-hmm. I don't see anything at the moment that tells me that, you know, we're going to get kind of a, it's almost like we're going to get, you know, a perfect market. And I don't see that happening. You know, that, you know, these markets were set up, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago to get capital to the right place. You know, that's the basis of what markets are, right? You know, and then they've morphed into all sorts of other things over the centuries. And I don't see AI, you know, fundamentally coming up with a perfect solution that capital gets from A to B in an efficient way immediately. Maybe it will, but I don't think it's going to be in our lifetime.
No, it's interesting because even when I started, you know, on doing my stuff on the life floor, yeah, it's 1982, sort of ZX Spectrum, I think, was coming out, you know, and then...
You're right, it was.
Right, and but then when when we went Pentium and computers, guess, went bananas, I don't know that analysis ever changed at all. You know, that maybe there was more stuff, but I don't know that it was easier to analyze the market as a result. It was that you still needed those raw skills. Mm. I don't know that computers made much of a difference. Obviously, there's the algo stuff, maybe some of the fast-moving stuff. But in terms of the general appreciation of market direction, you still need to be at core. And you still need to be a very good technical analyst at core and then to interact with the, you know, the medium of how observe the market. So, yeah, I think you're right that it it looks like it might be an answer, but it's many years away, I think.
One of my old colleagues up to a few years ago was – still doing points and figure charts by hand.
Yeah.
And he's a great effects trader.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, he failed it by writing them out.
Yes.
And that people had lost that by not doing that. Mm. And it's just an interesting angle that you might be able to do something differently somewhere along the line.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. Yeah. I mean, I think things are going to change and they do develop. But, you know, at the core, you know, these markets continue to be driven by, you know, whether it's, you know, greed, desire, fear. The market will always swing too far and go too far. We get, you know, over exuberance. And remember, all the AI is only working on back data, right? It's only working on data it has, which is all influenced by us, you know, and even if it, how's it going to filter out hundreds of years? And the fact that we've got tick data now, you know, it can look at tick data. I don't know when tick data was available from, but it's probably over 20 years of maybe 30 years of tick data. So you've got, you know, I mean, probably trillions of different data points to analyze. You know, I don't think we're anywhere near there yet of being able to say, well, what part of that is actually the real move? And what part of that is, you know, humans being exuberant and pushing the market too far or stopping the market going, or is there a, you know, there's lots of conspiracy theorists out there. I'm far from one of them, but is there a, you know, is there a force outside that from an institutional force, a government that's stopping the market? Well, there is when we come to intervention, right? So, you know, the interventions happen. So we certainly see that stock market's going too far, too fast, too soon, you know, so, you know, whether the AI is going to be able to strip all of that and say, well, if we didn't have all those stupid humans involved, this was what of the path of the market should have been, and then try to keep us along that path. But then whilst you've still got, if we get a solution where we've got part of the market is driven by AI and part of it is still driven by humans, then the humans are still going to push it too far one way or too far the other way, right? And the AI, as much as it might say, well, it shouldn't be up there because you're all wrong, well, then too bad. You're AI, you're offside on the trade and it is up there, you know?
Listen, It's been a great chat. It's been great talking to you. I'm going to hand over to Mark in a minute to sort of perhaps bring it to a close. But can you tell our audience a little bit about where they can find more about Trade Day and where they can find out more about you and your work?
Yeah, so tradeday.com is the easy answer to that. Come take a look, you know, have a look at the website. And, you know, there's stuff on there about my background. If you want to go and check me out on LinkedIn, it's Steve. I think I'm under Steve Miley. It might be Stephen Miley. I'm not sure. But, yeah, there's not many Stephen Mileys out there. So come check me out on LinkedIn. And if you want to fire me an email, steve@tradeday.com, you know, is where if you want some kind of personal answer, I can and give you that. Or just fire an email into support@tradeday.com. And, yeah, I would be glad to have anyone who wants to come and explore the world of evaluation challenges in the futures prop space, you know, where we, you know, happy to have you on board.
Super. Well, look, it's been delightful to speak to you. And I think we also to mention that I think you're a member of the Society of Technical Analysts as well. And of course, the supporters of the podcast and the great work they do. And of course, the home study course, which if you type in Alpha Mind, you can get discount for, is something that people at the retail side, if they're looking for a foundation, that is the foundation to have. And yeah, it's something that can allow you to be curious about markets. It's done you good. It's done me good. The ability to have a view and to have a view without not too much effort, really. As long as you've got a chart, you can have a view and go to the golden source. Yeah, the things out there. We've heard someone you're like this. Talk about bull markets and bear markets. He invented the phrase buffalo markets.
All right.
The buffalo, where the market moves sideways, and he said that was a market term. Well, we've never heard of it, but you know, but people are making things up. But so this stuff allows you to be curious, and if we can be curious about things, then we might just find the way. And of course, perhaps I shall leave you with the phrase: go find yourself a Norman.
Yeah,
indeed. Right. Thanks, Steve. Been great.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Alphaman podcast today. We also want to extend a thank you to our podcast sponsor, the Society of Technical Analysts. Do check out their brilliant home study course, and you can see more about that at our website, alpha-mind.net. And of course, if you're keen to know more about how AlphaMind can help you, please do also look up further details of our services on our website or reach out to us at info@alpha-mind.net. That just leaves us to say thank you, and we wish you the best of luck in the weeks ahead.